Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today is the author of the popular Longmire mystery series, Craig Johnson. Johnson's books has spawned a successful television series as well, featuring Robert Taylor, which ran for 6 seasons on first A&E, then Netflix. To date, Johnson has authored 21 books, including novels and short story collections on his protagonist, Sheriff Walt Longmire of Absaroka County, Wyoming, the least populous county in the least populous state. Absaroka County is a fictional county, but in a very real place near Johnson's Ranch in Ucross, near the Bighorn Mountains and near the Montana border. Longmire's character is a well-read and educated amalgam of Old West and New West, and over the years his adventures have taken him around Wyoming, into Montana, solving crimes in Philadelphia where his undersheriff and sometimes love interest, Victoria Moretti, hails from, even Mexico, the setting for his previous book, Depth of Winter. In his latest book, Longmire's back in Absaroka, investigating first the death of a sheep, then the subsequent discovery of a mysterious hanging of the shepherd guarding the sheep. The name of the book is Land of Wolves. Johnson will be a guest of Booksmart Tulsa tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock at the IDL Ballroom, and he joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Craig Johnson, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, good to be here.
Take us back to the beginning. How did Walt Longmire begin as a character? How did you devise him?
Oh, my goodness. Like, you got to remember that this was quite a while back. Like, that, you know, this was like, you know, more than 20 years ago, like that, when I was formulating the idea for the books. And that was a period in time when everything was kind of CSI this and CSI that. And, you know, the forensics and the ballistics and all that stuff, all the technology seemed to be kind of overrunning the storytelling, like it seemed to me. And so I ran into two DCI investigators, that's a division of criminal investigation here in Wyoming, where we have one crime lab down in Cheyenne, like that. And I asked them, I said, how long does it take you guys to get DNA evidence? And they said it took sometimes 6 to 9 months. And I said, well, that's just not particularly honest in what they're doing in these books and TV shows and all of this. And they said, no, not really, not at all. And so I thought, well, what if you had a protagonist who was the sheriff of the least populated county in the least populated state, Wyoming, which has only 500,000 people in it? And I thought, you know, it would kind of make you focus more on character and place. And lo and behold, you know, Walt Longmire was born.
What I love about him is he's a combination of the attributes of the Old West, the Old West sheriff, the archetype, and what I would call the literary West, because I think of Wyoming and Montana in the 1990s as being this blossoming of literary talent, and he's a literary man.
He is. Like, that's one of the things that maybe most people don't know, that you know, the majority of these old cowboys, whenever they would winter up, is the term that they would use. You know, whenever the ranching duties, would kind of start to dwindle, you know, going into a High Plains winter, you know, they would winter up, you know, and find a place to spend the winter. And one of the things they would always take with them was a large stack of books. One of the most read books, you know, in Louis L'Amour's entire canon of works was Plutarch's Lives, you know, where these cowboys would, haul some of these books around with them in their saddlebags. And I think that, you know, is one of the mistakes. I get to think that these individuals, you know, were not well-read or not well-educated. They might have been self-educated and self-read like that, but it didn't keep them from reading. I mean, you have to remember, there were no televisions back then. There were no movies. There were none of this, you know, the internet or any of this kind of thing. There were books. And Walt is kind of a direct, you know, lineage to that. You know, he reads. And only those of us who read, you know what kind of an advantage that is, particularly in a society where, you know, we're not really reading as much maybe as we have in the past, or maybe certainly as much as we should. And I think he's exemplary of that particular type of individual. But you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right in that he's something of a conduit, you know, between a past, you know, that harkens back, you know, to that kind of blue ribbon kind of, you know, straight ahead, you know, live by a code kind of hero, and then the complexities of a more, you know, contemporary West.
I love in the last two books, you know, he's going to hunt down his daughter's kidnappers in Mexico, and he's got a copy of an Ambrose Bierce biography. And in the new book, he's able to discuss lycanthropy and scientific method with a host of a pseudoscience cable show. So obviously he is a sort of a Renaissance Western sheriff.
He tries. He tries very hard, like that, to try and keep up on things like that. And that's one of the great joys, like of writing a character like that. Because I mean, whenever I first started writing the books, you know, maybe the first draft, you know, maybe Walt wasn't quite so well read, like that. Well, that didn't leave me very many options, you know, for alluding to like literary works like that, or you know. And the thing is that I think I stumbled onto something there, because I'll be honest with you, I think that the people that read my books, you know, I have a sneaking suspicion they might have read other books, too. And it kind of led to, you know, a conduit, you know, once again, you know, for Walt and the reader, like that, you know, they kind of, you know, took Walt to home. I mean, Walt is kind of haunted, you know, by the written word. You know, he was an English major there at USC when he was an offensive lineman in the 1960s, you know, before, you know, he was, you know, graduated and lost his deferment and was drafted and went to Vietnam, like that, and became a Marine investigator. His offices are, you know, an old Carnegie Library back behind the City Hall. You know, he's always got a book. He's always got a stack of books, you know, somewhere around him at any given time, like that. And in many ways, he's haunted by books, like that, and then carries them with him no matter where he goes.
Earlier on in our conversation, you mentioned that I wanted to create a character in a particular place, and that particular place is Absaroka County, which is a fictional county in a very real place. It's someplace near the northern border of Wyoming and Montana. It's near and encompassing the very real Bighorn Mountains. It's also a fictionalized version of your home. What is special about this place and why you decided to create Walt Longmire there?
Well, it's a magic little spot up there. That it's one of those little island areas like that, that, you know, maybe is not so well known. You know, generally when you mention some place like Wyoming, you know, everybody's heard of Yellowstone. Everybody knows Cheyenne, you know, and the Frontier Days Rodeo and those type of things, or Devil's Tower, and this little stretch of mountains that reaches down out of Montana and curves its way off of the greater, you know, Rocky Mountain region, the Bighorns. It's a pretty amazing place, like at the Bighorn National Forest, the Cloud Peak Wilderness area, and the little towns that, you know, dot the foothills there. Buffalo, like it is the town that I modeled Durant off of, and Johnson County is kind of the template for Absaroka County, which, you know, neither of which exist like that. But I was having a conversation with the Office of Tourism for the state of Wyoming here the other day, and they were saying how thankful they were for my books, and I asked them why, and they said, well, because you don't make up locations. So whenever people call us and want to know where we can find this book, you know, or with, you know, the instances that happen in that book, or, you know, whatever, we can actually, you know, tell them where those places are, because you use real street names and numbers and trailheads, and you know, you can actually follow along, you know, with the books, you know, with quad sheets, you know, up in the Bighorn Mountains or out on the Powder River region. And you know, I think that that's, you know, it provides a certain challenge, of course, like that, because you don't give yourself the literary freedom to just make things up, you know. But I think there's a quality of truth, you know, and an ability, you know, for people to really enjoy the books maybe more so like that when they take place in that reality of what Wyoming really is. And yep. I don't know, it's you know, my ranch is just to the south of the Northern Cheyenne and the Crow Reservation, and you know, it's just an amazing place, like at one of those like little secret places that maybe people don't know quite so much about. But then, of course, now I've written 15 novels and there's a TV show about it, and so people are kind of discovering it to a certain extent, you know, through Longmire Days, like, and you know, the tourism for the state of Wyoming has maybe taken a little bit of an uptick in that the books have been translated into about 17 different languages. And so, you know, maybe I've blown it for everybody. I don't know.
Well, it is that interesting amalgam between indigenous culture and, you know, the ranching culture and the sheep herding culture, which I'm assuming Johnson County was the Johnson County where there was the war between sheep herders and cattlemen many, many years ago?
It was. It was actually a little bit more of a war between settlers and large land-owning ranchers, like that, more than it was sheep and cattle. But there certainly was, you know, was a, you know, history of antagonism between the two, like that. But what, of course, broke that down was money. Like that, whenever the large cattle ranches discovered that there were going to be leases opened up, you know, in mountainous regions, you know, which may not be perfect, you know, for trying to, you know, herd cattle, like that, they were, you know, opportune, like that, you know, for sheep, like that. And of course, there's very little that, you know, cowboys know less about than sheep. But they were smart enough to figure out, you know, hey, there are these people called the Basques. From this region, you know, over there between Spain and France and the Pyrenees Mountains. And they seem to know an awful lot about sheep, so let's bring some of them over. And, you know, it's kind of one of the hallmarks of the history of Wyoming, like that the Basques are an extraordinarily tenacious, enterprising people. And, you know, they came over like that, and they kind of took to the American West. They're scattered all over the American West now, like that. And, you know, some of the largest ranches in Johnson County, they're my home county, are actually owned by, you know, a lot of these Basques. And they're an interesting people, you know, that populate, you know, the American West. I mean, there's always going to be that belief that, you know, the entire American West is nothing but cowboys and Indians. But in all actuality, there's an awful lot more to it, a lot more ethnicities, a lot more shades, you know, of different indigenous peoples, like that, and also, you know, expatriates like that from over in places like Europe. Like that. And that continues today, you know, with a lot of the shepherds coming up from South America, which is the case in this particular book,
yes,
in Land of Wolves.
Well, I wanted to talk about In Land of Wolves because the Basque tradition does play a huge role in the story of this family that's sheep herders. In the new book, though, Walt has just come from a very close brush with death in the previous book, A Depth of Winter, and is feeling his age and his mortality. He's not himself. And, of course, the book begins with a death of a sheep, of all things, and the likely culprit at hand is a solitary wolf. So what inspired this story?
Well, I mean, you know, it was a situation where, you know, these are situations that do happen. Like that, a lot of these shepherds that come in and sign up to take these jobs on, it's a difficult job, like that, and it's a very isolated job, you know, where you're up in the mountains and there really isn't much support, you know, from the ranching communities. I mean, you've got a supply line that comes in and they drop off food or whatever it is you need on every couple of months like that. But, you know, it's a very isolated job like that. And sometimes that type of work, you know, it takes a toll. Historically, it's known as sagebrushed. Whenever, you know, some of these shepherds, you know, or cowboys, you know, that are out on these lineman shacks or in these shepherd's wagons or whatever like that, they kind of tend to lose touch with reality like that. And, you know, maybe go off the rails a little bit. And so there is a history of them actually committing suicide. And so when this shepherd, you know, who's from Chile, commits suicide, like it looks as though it's, you know, self-inflicted, that it's a suicide like that. But then, of course, you know, as they start this investigation to discover more and more about, you know, who he was and what he was involved with, that, you know, it may turn out that it may be more of a homicide investigation. And then, of course, as you stated, like at the, you know, one of the complications of this is that, you know, the first sign of, you know, of something going wrong up in the mountains is a dead sheep, and, you know, these wandering sheep that aren't seem to being, like, you know, being tended to, and you know, the sheep itself, you know, is not an untoward occurrence in Wyoming, and what we refer to as a sheepocide, an awful lot of the time, like that, and they, you know, kind of run onto each other like that, and the sheep appears to have been killed by a wolf. Having come over from the Lamar Valley section, you know, the Yellowstone, like getting across the basin and there in the Bighorns, which we don't get too many wolves there, but we do periodically get them. And it was interesting to me, of course, like to try and take on a little bit of a hot topic issue, which wolves are in the contemporary American West, and try and give voice, you know, to both sides of a very contentious issue like that. I mean, I like Walt dealing, you know, with the things, you know, that the sheriffs in the West are dealing with. You know, we 9 times out of 10, the plot lines tend to come from newspaper articles, you know, that I've picked up, you know, in different places. And in this situation, you know, of course, like these things do happen. And it gave me an opportunity to work, you know, with the Game and Fish Department and the large predator response teams, like that deal, you know, not only, you know, with these animals, but also with the public response, which can sometimes be, you know, a little overreactive sometimes. And, you know, for me, it's an opportunity to take on, you know, some of those issues and kind of deal with them like that. But then also an attempt to try and tell a good story that includes, you know, Walt Longmire and the Absaroka County Sheriff's Department.
My guest today is Craig Johnson. He's the author of the Longmire series of mystery novels. His latest novel in the Longmire series is titled Land of Wolves. It's published by Viking. And his previous book, A Depth of Winter, is now out in softcover. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Through the course of the book, we learn about a lot about that status of wolves in Wyoming. There's a bit of a wolf panic in Durant from just the fact that there is a wolf in the Bighorn Mountains. And we learn a lot about wolves in Wyoming. The wolf in question, 777M, is a remotus wolf. I never heard of this term. Is that a real thing, or is that something from your imagination?
No, it's an actuality. Like it, there was this particular type of wolf that naturally inhabited Wyoming, and then in the 1990s when there was the reintroduction of the Arctic Canadian wolves, like they were actually a different species of wolf that was brought down like that and reintroduced into Yellowstone. And the question becomes, of course, were there any of these natural Wyoming wolves left, and what might have become of them? And this book kind of poses that question, to kind of see, well, if there were some of these survivors, how would they compete, with these Arctic wolves like that, which are perhaps even larger, more aggressive like that than the Wyoming wolves were like that. And what happened to them like that? And for me, that's part of the stock and trade of the books like that, is to try and write on as many different levels as I can. A lot of people, as I said, will read a book like this, just to see who done it. And that's wonderful. Like, and I'm more than happy to provide, a storyline for those readers like that. But I also like to provide, other things too, like a development of character, like that, a history with these things, the humor that's in the books, that's a hallmark, for the books, for me, the amount of humor that's in the books, just simply because I think it's an honest portrayal of, what it is that Walt does. Anybody that's ever had a difficult job, whether it be in the medical field, law enforcement, teaching, whatever it is, like that, you get to see people at their best and you get to see people at their worst. You're going to do one of two things at the end of the day. You're either going to laugh or you're going to cry, and I know which one I'd rather do.
Well, of course, it complicates the task if that wolf is an Erymotus wolf, because in your part of the country, unlike Yellowstone, where wolves are protected, a wolf can be shot pretty much fairly easily in the state. Is that not correct?
Oh, no, absolutely. Like, yeah. It's seen as a predator, and it's a predator zone like that. And, some of these rules, they change from county to county. But I kind of modeled the ones for Absaroka County off the ones there in Johnson County. And as a predator zone, like, they can hire, professional hunters to go out like that and remove this animal, take that animal down like that. And so the chances of its survival are relatively slim. And that, that kind of, goes back to an analogy for Walt himself. Is Walt in a situation where, his survival, like it is looking, perhaps a little slimmer than it was, years in the past. But that's the fun. That's the fun of writing in those layers, like it, and trying to put as many aspects in a book and in for readers and different types of readers as you possibly can.
I want to ask you about some of the genre conventions you seem to break in some, at least the books I've read. In your books, Walt ages. And that's usually a no-no in mystery fiction. Why did you decide to have him age?
It seemed like an honest portrayal of, of a carbon-based life form. Like, it just didn't seem very realistic, how, these characters just kind of shrug off, whatever happened. They lost an arm like that, or, whatever, and they just come back and, there's an arm there just like it was before. Like, and so it's just a certain degree, a certain amount of respect, for the readership. Like I said, there's a willful suspension of disbelief like that, with a lot of genre fiction. But, I kind of enjoy the fact that, that Walt is changing and that Walt is growing older and he's having to deal and contend, with the fact that, maybe he's not quite as physically capable as he has been. And so he has to rely on, other resources, to kind of overcome, that disability. And I think in many ways that, to be honest, that a series of books certainly survives on the ability of those characters to change and develop and overcome, over a period of time like that. I mean, we've all started, a series of books that start gangbusters and you really love the characters and the place and they're really exciting and they're wonderful like that. And then you get about seven or eight books in and then all of a sudden it seems like they're kind of, retreading, the plots, that the characters are, doing the same things that they did, seven or eight books, previously. And that's just really not the way human beings work. For me, it was an attempt to try and, just have those characters be as real as they could possibly be. And Walt is the perfect example of that. And he will continue to age and he will continue to evolve, as a human being, which is, what we all have to do in our lives.
When you started the series, Walt was no spring chicken. He was a veteran sheriff even then. But I guess you have a formula for how Walt ages from book to book?
I do have a sneaky little formula that I used, like that. It actually was, it kind of like, was a side effect of something that happened. I was talking to my good friend Tony Hillerman, this was years ago, and he said, I said, how do you do this? I was writing my second book, and he was on his like 20-something book. I said, how do you do this? And he said, well, you know, Craig, you got to, you know, at the risk of sounding like a bad sports analogy, you got to play them up, you know, one at a time. But you've also, you know, got to find some way to, you know, change the landscape of the books. And I thought about, well, what's the thing that has the largest scale effect on us as Westerners? And I thought, well, it's got to be the weather. It's got to be the seasons. And so I kind of write the books in a cyclical, you know, seasonal fashion. I call it a Vivaldi because I go through four seasons before I can, you know, actually get through 1 year of Walt's life. So it takes me about four books, you know, to get through 1 year of Walt's life. And that accidentally, you know, kind of retarded the, you know, the aging, you know, factor of Walt. You know, here I am 15 books down the road, and I'm 15 years older, and Walt's only about 3 years older than, you know, when we first meet him. And, you know, at some point in time, I'm going to be older than Walt. I don't know if I like that idea or not, but it certainly allows me to keep him on hand a little bit longer than, you know, perhaps I would have if it was going to be 1 year at a time.
Now, there's another convention that you break a little to an extent. You know, books usually, your books pick up on the previous with only the bare minimum backstory of what actually happened before. And a lot of times, you know, it doesn't matter if you pick up book one or book 15 in the series, you're going to get all this backstory in the mystery about who, you know, the protagonist is, his supporting characters. That's not necessarily the case in yours. You kind of expect us to sort of pick up and follow along. Has that always been the case in your books?
Well, I think that, you know, each story should stand alone, you know, on its own. And you can allude, you know, to previous storylines, previous experiences that the characters have had but you know, I think you can belabor that, you know, to a certain extent, you know, to where you're overburdening, you know, the reader with more than they really need to know. They need to know the resonance, you know, of that, of what's happened with the characters and what's going to continue to, you know, have an effect on the characters. But if they really want to know that story, then, like, you know, they can jump back, you know, that previous book and read that book and find out, you know, in ultimate detail, you know, about what it is that happened, you know. So it's a kind of a fine line that you try and walk, you know, to give them enough information, you know, to be able to continue on with the story, even if it's the first book that they've ever picked up. I kind of, you know, try and pride myself on the fact that, like, you know, any reader could just pick up a copy of Land of Wolves, you know, and start right in learning about Walt and his life, like at an Absaroka County there, like that. And hopefully it will be intriguing enough, you know, to make them want to go back and start all the way back with A Cold Dish, you know, the very first Walt Longmire book that, you know, came out in 2005, and then work their way back up, you know, through the series. I know that that's the way that I read, you know. I mean, I know it's a term that's used with an awful lot of TV shows nowadays, and certainly with Longmire, this binging. But I tend to find, you know, writers that I really enjoy their voice, I really enjoy their style of writing. And then I go and I buy every single book that they've written because I want to own those books because, you know, to me, there are few enough writers that I feel that strongly about. And so, you know, to reward myself by, you know, owning those books and, you know, being able to go back through. And, you know, the most wonderful thing you can always say to an author is, I reread your book. And there are so many readers that I get these wonderful emails from that say that they started back at the beginning of the books and reread the entire series in preparation, you know, for the new release that was coming out. You love to hear that. You know, you really love to hear that. I mean, you work for a solid year on a book, and, you know, you don't want to be popcorn. You know, one of the terms that I despise more than any other is maybe page-turner. You know, why in the world would I write something for a full year and my only goal would be to get you to leaf through it to get to the end? You know, that's my job, is to kind of trip you up, with the language, with the dialogue, with the storyline, to kind of embed you in that world, you know, and let you be a part of Walt's life, you know, for a brief period there, you know. And when people read my books, I don't really even want them to know that they're reading a book. I want them to fall into that world and be a part of it and forget that they're even reading a book. I want them in that world.
Now, I have to admit, Craig, I discovered Longmire through the television series. But now, having read several of the books, I'm pleasantly surprised to see that, you know, they're very different, so there are differences. The series does capture the essence of Walt Longmire pretty accurately. What was your experience with television like?
You know, it was really very gratifying. I know it's kind of surprising because generally when you hear from authors when they're discussing their experiences, you know, with Hollywood, you know, it's generally not a very flattering picture that they paint, you know. And an awful lot of times I think that that's, you know, a problem on both sides. I think an awful lot of authors go into Hollywood, you know, with expectations, ones that can't be satisfied. And, you know, for me, I kind of went in with my eyes open, knowing that, you know, that this was going to be a different medium. It's kind of like singing about painting, you know, I mean, you know, it's going to be something different. You know, it's very difficult, you know, for a 42-page teleplay to encompass, you know, a 350-page book. And, you know, one of the producers said, you know, they said, your books don't break down into a 42-page teleplay very easily. I was like, thank goodness. If they did, you shouldn't be reading them. But, you know, they were extraordinarily, you know, intelligent and insightful people, you know, with incredible track records of shows, you know, that they had done. And so I was very, very fortunate like that. But, you know, then once again, I'm a cowboy author from a town of 25 like that. So it's not like I'm John Grisham or Stephen King, you know, and dictating to Hollywood, you know, what they're going to do and how they're going to do it. So the only recourse that I had was to try and team up with the very best people that I could team up with, and then do the hardest thing in the world, you know, in any business, get the best people that you can and then leave them alone, let them do what it is that they do. And I was extraordinarily fortunate, like the producers that I worked with, like and the people that I worked with, the writers, even the actors. I mean, you know, we've had, you know, events, you know, where the actors just, you know, show up whenever I'm doing a book event. And that's really very gratifying, you know, to have. I mean, the TV show has been kind of on a hiatus, you know, here for the last 2 years there on Netflix, but it's streaming 24/7. And it's funny like that, because I get an awful lot of people who come to me and they have that same apologetic tone that you had, where they say, I have to admit that I, you know, I didn't know about your books, you know, but I found them through the TV show. And I'm always like, you don't have to apologize. You found me. That's the important part. You know, it's kind of wonderful to have that working for you on a 24/7 basis.
Of course, the big difference is that in your books, the deaths are in the single digits. On television, it's like, you know, the body count, it's like, why would anybody go to Absaroka County? It's like, get out of town.
I know, it seems like murder capital USA, doesn't it? Like, you know, it's, and that's actually one of the things that I kind of like came to very early in the series. Like, I thought, okay, well, you know, if this is the least populated county in Wyoming, there's only so many people that you're going to be able to murder before it becomes ludicrous. Like, and so what I did was, it seemed kind of obvious that, you know, if Walt Longmire is solving these cases and he's, you know, really a world-class detective, you know, there in Wyoming, it's not really in law enforcement the way it's portrayed an awful lot of the time in television and movies, where, you know, it's like, hey, this is our turf, man, this is our jurisdiction, and all of that. You know, as a general rule, if you're very good at what you do, you will get invitations, you know, from other law enforcement, you know, divisions like that, that will ask you to come take a look at some notes, or, you know, look at a case file, like at, or a cold case or something along those lines. And so what that made for was an opportunity for Walt to kind of expand his jurisdiction, you know, and be able to go up into Montana, over to South Dakota. I think even in the third book, he's in Philadelphia, you know, with a murder investigation. The fourth book, you know, in Vietnam back in 1967. And so I've kind of gotten to the point now where I almost write the novels in a kind of like a ball player format, where it's kind of home in a way. You know, there'll be one, you know, book that'll take place there in and around Absaroka County, and then I'll take Walt, you know, out on the road, like that, and, you know, play an away game with him, like that. And it's kind of a nice thing to do, because it gives me an opportunity to kind of stretch that jurisdiction and have him involved, you know, in a lot of different places and a lot of different cases that maybe he wouldn't have been if he wasn't as successful as he is.
Greg Johnson is the author of the Longmire series of mystery novels. His latest novel is titled Land of Wolves. It's published by Viking. His previous book, Depth of Winter, is now out in softcover. He'll be a guest of Booksmart Tulsa tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock at the IDL Ballroom in downtown Tulsa. Information at booksmarttulsa.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed any of our previous episodes, you can listen online, on demand, anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.